Hello, and welcome to another Mondays on Tuesdays podcast episode. I have a really exciting, hopefully humorous, hopefully minimally insulting for the value episode to record. It's called Safe for Work. And I'm basically talking about what work could and should be, in my opinion. And it has a lot to do with the concept that home life and work life should not be that different. This is a concept that's kind of hard to get into, so I'm going to get into it in a whole bunch of sideways. My week has been wild, and I think a lot of people's has, actually. I've talked to a few people that seem to have a sense of shock or a sense of turmoil, and then also realizations seem to be sort of, you know, popping off like, not quite like popcorn, more like landmines. Compare Basic has had a very interesting month. When I decided to go out and find a day job and put the crowdfunding on hold, I got a bunch of interviews that went nowhere, and I was getting really scared. I was like, oh no, what if Compare Basic is my only lifeline? And so I started building really, really fast. I was like, I need speed. I need to put the C language down, pick up Python, sketch out the front end. And that turned out to be amazing. I found out all the reasons I was writing in C in the beginning and not Python. But also, as things came together faster, it was actually easier to sketch out the front end. So I have a really interesting sort of token composition system that's presently a like login and email thing that I need to communicate with a few people. And I've since concluded that I probably will not stay in Python land for long, but it's a really great perspective on which parts of Seneca are the most valuable and which ones were valuable in low-level tooling land and not as valuable in higher-level front-end land. So that's just, you know, fantastically interesting. I'm also looking a lot at why my timelines are so elusive and why it is more than somewhat embarrassing that in 2.5 years I haven't delivered a single usable thing. And the analysis I was making is, so I cook a lot at home and now I cook at work. And I finally, this is the first week where I have like enough hours to really, you know, pay my bills. And so that's been exhausting and exciting and, you know, mixed feelings and all kinds of things. But what I'm realizing is that I never fail to cook anything. And I do fail to deliver software on time pretty much all the time. And it's common within companies for that to be a common thing. I started realizing that the expectations of cooking, if I'm making, you know, a curry that I know how to make in like 30 or 40 minutes, if I'm, you know, baking bread that I understand the 48-hour process very well, even when things don't go quite right, when I run out of time, I know the things I can do to either, you know, put the rising dough back in the fridge and cook it the next day, or, you know, change the curry recipe a little bit so it needs less cooking because, you know, I'm using different flavors that take, you know, less time to spread around, or, you know, there are options I have, and it's an understandable fixed thing. And this comes down to a really interesting question that I've had for a while, which is the difference between a hobbyist and a professional. And I've always said that businesses kind of have their value as a mechanism of consistency. When I go to a restaurant, it's because I want it to taste the way I remember it tasting last time. You know, the car I drive, I expect to function a certain way according to, you know, the brand. And then a hobbyist is someone who can do something of professional quality, but not with consistency and not with predictability. And I think this has a lot to do with business success and business failure. And in my case, I've structured Compare Basic so that there's no such thing as failure. There are only delays. And that's kind of a beautiful thing. And it definitely seeds innovation. But I think there's a lot of magic and misunderstanding in the idea that the sort of disciplinarial position of cutting costs within big companies is essentially a misunderstanding and a bad interpretation of when you really need dependable time and when you need flexible time for the sake of innovation. And I'll talk a bit about that, but most of the episode is actually about how work could be more meaningful. All right. So safe for work is you're probably getting all kinds of pictures in your head about what that could mean. What I'm actually talking about is bringing your whole person to work, bringing who you are and what you're processing and what the meaning of life is to you, and having work be like an exercise in personal growth that provides professional growth, that provides company growth, essentially. And I'll give you my favorite analogy of a leisure activity that involves a lot of effort, because most do. Most of the best leisure activities, even board games, are thinky, strategic things, and video games the same way. They're all very intense, very effort laden, yet we love them. Gardening, very satisfying, very labor intensive. Cooking, same thing. And one of my favorite hobbies was archery. Oh, it's so amazing. I at one point was on a grand jury in Brooklyn for I think either 1 or 2.5 miles. It was a very long grand jury, and the court would get out at 2 p.m. and there was an archery range nearby, and I wasn't going to go back to work. So I would just go to the archery range a few times a week, and it was just wonderful. I had my own bow at that time. It was like a one piece sort of almost bare bow. I had no sight so that I could like use the force and measure the distance between the top of my hand and the target and just kind of like wing it with sort of a feeling. And what I found about archery is that it was such a fantastically physical and mental activity where if I was in a bad headspace, none of my arrows were going to hit the target. And when I would have a shot that would really, I would line it up really well, I wouldn't move my hands back and forth in a way that would disrupt the shot, and then I would re release the arrow and it would just sail through the target. And when it was a good shot, I remember having this feeling of, what was on my mind at that time? Who am I as a person that can do this magical sort of seemingly defying the laws of physics activity of having, my will be done with this arrow shooting straight across, to 10 or 20 meters. And that made archery such a satisfying process for kind of digging into my own mind and my sense of focus. And I remember walking away from that experience of shooting at an archery range several times a week, really thinking deeply about how much of our existence is based on this idea that we are sort of gaming out who we are at the time. When I for a while played the Formula One racing video game a lot. I had everything. I had the wheels. I had really nice pedals, and I would notice that when I would have a really good lap and it would show in green, oh, you're ahead of your time. That was usually when I made a mistake, and I would turn off all the safety things of like traction control and automatic gear shifting, so that if I were to make a mistake, I'm spinning out. Like if you hit the gas as you're coming out of a turn, if you do the wrong thing, your lap time's dead because you just spun out. And I remember feeling like how much of life is this idea of unpacking who you are and even unpacking your traumas in the face of some challenge as a way of like figuring out what's on your mind and the presence of a challenge that surfaces your personal state of accomplishment that you can work out, who you are and share that with people. And then it's interactive, and it's, I mean, obviously archery is not interactive. But a number of things are, a number of enjoyable sports, a number of enjoyable personal things, and a lot of work could have this same aspect of being a place where the magic of life and the overcoming of challenges and creative solutions really could be a big part of it. And I think that to the extent that work becomes the opposite of that, which is follow directions, damn it. Or, oh, it's just something I do for the mortgage. I don't really care about what possibly moral ethical issues are, or even the health of the business. I'm not going to be there in 10 years. I don't really care. I think that's when businesses kind of fall down. And I think this idea that business is business and home life is home life has kind of screwed that up. And I've always wondered why, taking breaks and clearing your head has like such kind of a bad taste in some business leaders' mouths. And I was going to say, if you could pinpoint a place in a business where the best ideas happen, it's probably not the boardroom. It's probably a place that's shared by everyone. And I'm going to say it's probably the elevator. Because people probably have their best ideas when they stop working and leave. Or they're showing up in the morning and they're about to get started. And there's actually a really interesting neurobiological reason for this, which is that the prefrontal cortex, which manages focus, can at times shut down other parts of the brain. And when you let that go, your brain fires in multiple places, almost like a sort of a symphony that can actually solve creative problems better. And so this idea of rest and activity is actually been observed by brain scans as an effective form of intelligence. And I think that there are some things in society that we debate and some things that we don't. And, you know, I don't hear a lot of people advocating for, you know, murder or theft being good things or even debatable. It's like we accept that those are bad. And I think that I would like to put work-life balance in that category. But let's just accept that it's a good thing and a necessary thing. And if you're in the camp of feeling like work-life balance is debatable, I want you to do an experiment. The next time your phone says it has a low battery, I want you to give it a pep talk. I want you to say, like, come on, buddy. The Nokia before you lasted 4 days. What's wrong with you? Like, you know, or you're made of tougher stuff. You know, fortune favors the bold. And then obviously your phone's going to run out of battery. And so, you know, this idea that things need to be recharged and, you know, you wouldn't let your staff use the equipment in a way that grinds it down so that you have to buy new equipment all the time. Why do you let the managers and bosses of your company grind down your staff in a way that they leave and you have to replace them all the time? It quite frankly just doesn't make sense. And I think work-life balance needs to be placed in the category of undebatably essential things. And this comes down, there's a related concept to sort of what people think money buys. And I think a lot of people mistakenly believe that money buys them a comfortable life, meaning that they deserve things that they want, whether it's for sale or not. And I have a very sort of strict ethos that money is for buying what people are selling. And, you know, happiness is not for sale. And I think we've all sort of seen or experienced, those of us who work in restaurants or have even just, you know, been in restaurants, that some people believe that their money entitles them to talk to people the way they really want to anyway, but nobody will stick around while they do it. And so they show up and they talk down to a waiter and, you know, they'll ask questions like, does this sandwich have mustard in it? Yeah. Oh, does it come with barbecue sauce? Yeah. But does it have Dijon mustard? Oh, I'm going to order something else. Kind of almost like it's the server's fault that it doesn't have Dijon mustard, and now they're going to, you know, one-upmanship the server over it. And so I thought of a business model for people like this who really want their money to go into, you know, making themselves feel more whole again. I call it the denigration service, where you can talk down to someone for $10 a minute, and humorously it would accept Visa, American Express, and if you have an American Express Black Card, we can even get you in touch with an MBA you could talk down to. Just ask them when they were laid off and how much is left on their student loans. So, you know, this is a joke about the idea that money doesn't get you things that people aren't selling. If people aren't selling their dignity, you know, you can't use money to get it, and you definitely shouldn't. But there's another side that is actually more serious and more consequential, which is that I think some people believe that because money is supposed to buy them a comfortable life, because promotions are supposed to give them status, one of the things they are expecting to buy their way out of is owing anyone an explanation. So the idea is that the top spot in the corner office is someone who fires off an email and everybody just leaps into action, whether it makes sense or not. That's what people think they're getting when they get promotions and status and wealth. And that's disgusting. But the actual consequence is far more severe, which is that because this culture is idolized, you end up with people very, very far down in a company who believe that by offering an explanation, they are revealing how low class they are. And so I think this has eroded training and mentorship culture worse than anything else. And I've seen this now in restaurants and in software companies. The administrative companies I was in was kind of a unique situation because I was usually a temp coming into basically, they basically fired their staff down to a skeleton crew and needed someone like me to come in. And everybody was just desperate for the work to be done. So any question I had, everybody would answer because they're like, oh my God, we're so behind. So that was a kind of a unique crisis situation. But I think that the idea that people believe money buys them not having to explain themselves means that they are so resistant to taking 10 or 20 minutes to just sit down with someone and say, here's how we've done something. These are the results we've had. This is how you do this. And so training culture has really kind of evaporated. And that's really scary because it means that the actual strategic and institution and effective knowledge within companies is leaving every time a layoff happens or every time somebody walks out the door. And basically, we're right around the corner of a culture that does not value explanation as a culture that does not value thinking. And that's terrifying. That's really terrifying. And so to me, work culture being something which should be explorative and competitive, not in a combative sense, but in the sense of, you know, let's make this the best we possibly can. It really hinges on this idea that products and services are supposed to be something that delivers value that people pay for. And anything involved in that is necessary. Training, explanation, experimentation. And one of the things that I think is necessary for people to bring their whole selves to work is to have a sense of accomplishment. And to have a sense of accomplishment, you have to have a sense that you individually did something or came up with something or you are improving. And that's all really hard in a culture that doesn't value explanation, mentorship, or even challenge. Because challenge is the road to inconsistency. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, at the very beginning of the podcast, I am struggling with Compare Basic from an excess of challenge and an excess of experimentation. And I'm comparing that from the sort of relatively standard things that I cook at home and at work and realizing that for a business to deliver on timelines, there does have to be a degree of standardization. And this makes the idea of bringing your whole self to work that much harder. And I think things like video games really scratch that itch of challenge and reward in a way that employment doesn't. And the employment opportunities have so badly fallen out of the sky that I think if you combine that with the amount of sort of toxic male messages flying around, I think everyone is having a hard time feeling accomplished at work. I think men are particularly having a hard time feeling accomplished at work. And I think of a lot of it comes down to the sense of progress is in fact missing. That's not a factor of toxic masculinity or patriarchy. It's actually just a genuine struggle for all humans. And so I think the answer to this culturally and professionally is to understand that status and the value of status really, really ought to be checked by the value of delivering products and services. And in a way that holds bosses and managers accountable for training, mentorship, and explanation, but also structuring work so that what someone's dealing with personally, they can actually bring in the door and begin to process. If they're the kind of person who's always been shy and wants to experience having greater confidence, how can their job be part of that chapter of their life where they overcome their fear of presenting ideas? Or if someone, you know, really, really enjoys methodical repetition and they just have a really hard time handling surprises, is that something that they can actually unpack at work? And things like crying at work or having emotional outbursts or, you know, coming in late or needing time off, all of these things are part of life. And I think that you know, the purpose of life is to experience an ever-expanding experience of change and growth and understand what this thing is. And I think the more we sort of stamp that out and try and, you know, be do the square thing of standardization, the less work becomes something that people actually can consider something that they get more from than just their salary. You know, they feel like they grew as a person. They feel like they had a real hard time, you know, calling the people who work for them out on their misbehavior. And they had to realize what healthy boundaries were in terms of calling them out and also setting them themselves. And I think as work moves into an area where that's more the topic of personal growth, professional growth, company growth, challenge and reward, we have this avenue to sort of align personal, professional, financial meaning. And I believe it actually would be better for both the top and bottom line of a business. So safe for work, probably not the pictures you had in your head, but I'm actually talking about not psychological safety from the sense of people need to feel safe to be productive, but the idea of if people don't feel safe to really have, you know, experience a full life at work, then everything stagnates and everything falls apart. And so what I'm advocating for here with Safe to Work is a workplace where people are safe to grow and challenge themselves and take on experiments and unpack their behavior. And this is kind of a terrifying idea given some of the horrible emotional outbursts that we've all seen at work. But I think there's no other way to do it than to sort of make room for what a whole human is in the business world. And I'm excited about the idea. And as always, if you're excited about the kinds of things I talk to or this sort of mythical, hard to understand Syndica system I keep talking about, head on over to comparebasic.com and have a look at what we do. I really enjoy hearing from people. If you send an email to comparebasic@firecrow.com, I'll do my best to respond. And have a great week, even if it is tumultuous. And I'll record another one of these episodes very soon.